Today's date is May 30th, 2008. We're at the Atlantic Coast Bank at 715 Center Street, Fernandina Beach, Florida, 32034. The following interview is being conducted as part of the Amelia Island Museum of History's Veterans History Project in partnership with the Library of Congress. We are interviewing William S. Hopkins, date of birth March 29th, 1954, place of birth Syracuse, New York. My name is Robert Hamer, and I will interview Robert. I will interview Mr. Hopkins on behalf of the Amelia Island Museum of History. Assisting me is Jean-Claude Casamat, who will operate the recording equipment. During the course of the interview, we will be discussing the following subjects. What was your period of service? During which conflicts did you serve? What was your rank? And where did you serve? But first, let's start, Bill, by you telling us, what was your motivation to join the Navy back in 1981?
Well, my motivation was, it was interesting, and what I was doing was not that interesting. Also, it was a good opportunity at that time because Ronald Reagan had beefed up the military budget, and so there was a lot more money and pay increases throughout the military, so I saw a good opportunity. Plus, I had my college education, so I was able to get into an officer program, which was really exciting for me at that time.
Great. Where did you enlist? Where were you when you enlisted?
Syracuse, New York.
In Syracuse, New York. Yeah. Okay. And the Navy obviously was your branch of choice.
Right.
Did you have any expectation of what you wanted to do in the Navy at the time other than being an officer?
I didn't know anything about the Navy when I joined the Navy, so I had no expectations.
Okay. So where did you go from after you enlisted and you were actually on their roles, where did you go for your first training?
Well, when I got in, I went to OCS, Officer Candidate School, in Newport, Rhode Island. And that was, about 3 months.
Okay.
And do you want me to continue from
there? Yeah, sure.
After OCS, from OCS, from your class standing, they line you up from the first in the class to the last in the class.
Sure.
And all of the billets available in the Navy for that rank at the time are up on boards.
Okay.
So I was able to pick the Stark, which was a brand new ship, not even commissioned yet.
What kind of a ship was it?
It's the Stark is a guided missile fast frigate, FFG.
Okay.
Gas turbine. It was the hottest thing at the time.
Sure.
Or one of them, yeah.
And this is 1981, 82 timeline?
Right. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
And so tell us about your duty on board the Stark.
Well, before I went to the Stark, I went to recruiting duty in Syracuse for a while.
Sure.
And then I was sent to the Jesse L. Brown, which was a steam ship, a Knox-class frigate. And I deployed with the Jesse L. Brown first, even though I was assigned to the Stark.
Sure.
The Stark was in the shipyard. Mm-hmm. So I deployed with the Jesse L. Brown out of Charleston, and we did a NATO North European deployment through Europe and the Baltic, and we crossed the Arctic Circle. It's a very exciting trip, my first time out. I really didn't know what was going on, but I was along for the ride.
Sure. Yeah. And what was your function on board the Brown at the time?
I was a first lieutenant.
First lieutenant. That was your rank, but what were you?
It wasn't a rank. That's a job. That's a job title. And
on
a ship, a first lieutenant is in charge of the deck division. These are the guys that scrape and paint and put out the anchor and that kind of thing.
Good. Just two for clarification for other people, and I'm not quite sure what the difference is. A frigate is what kind of a boat? I mean, it's sort of an old term, right?
It is. It's not used the way the old term would be. A frigate is a picket ship. It's a small ship.
Okay.
It's a smaller, lighter tonnage ship. It's meant to defend a carrier battle group.
Oh, okay.
Or for other operations. It's not a deep draft ship.
Right.
They're maneuverable, smaller crews.
Does it have a lot of armament on it, a lot of guns?
Quite a few weapons. Yeah. Quite a few weapons.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Thanks for the clarification. It's a term I hadn't really heard a lot.
Yeah.
So you were on the Brown. You had your deployment there. Any interesting stories while you were on the Brown?
I'll tell you. That was exciting. Right from leaving Charleston in a storm and being sick for a couple of days, and then going to Europe with some other ships across the Atlantic, and then the weather was bad, and the North Atlantic is rough, just like you see in the papers. We had problems on the ship, I remember, standing watch and having radar problems going through the English Channel. I mean, we had all sorts of stories.
Yeah.
The Baltic, we had Soviets crisscrossing our path because this was kind of a territorial kind of game that the Navy plays once in a while to test boundaries and things like that.
Sure.
So I remember the CO being a little bit uptight about that Krivak crossing in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
But then just going up into the Arctic Circle, the weather was horrible and everything, you know, things froze on deck. And, that's what I remember. And, and this was my first deployment.
Right, so. Good. Okay, so from the Brown, you went to the Stark?
From the Brown, from the Brown, I went back to Newport.
Okay.
To Surface Warfare Officer School.
Oh.
And this is the main training.
Okay.
The Officer Candidate School is just to screen everybody and kind of see who can pick up what.
Sure.
But the Surface Warfare Officer School is where you actually get trained to do a job on a ship or several jobs. So back to Newport I went, and I was there for SWAS for, I think it's about a six-month program.
Okay.
And after SWAS, it was MPA school, Main Propulsion Assistance School, also in Newport. And then Damage Control Assistance School, which was in Newport and in Philadelphia.
Right.
So after I got those schools, then they sent me down to the pre-commissioning group that was in Norfolk, Virginia, even though the ship is in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
I stayed there a few months, then went out to Seattle, where I stayed until all the Navy systems were loaded into the ship, meaning the administrative stuff, and got the ship ready for commissioning in the shipyard. Mm-hmm. So I went through the commissioning process.
Now that's an experience I bet a lot of...
That was a lot of work.
Yeah. Getting ready to go out and be seaworthy and everything else.
Exactly.
Yeah, sure.
but being a brand new ship, it was really a golden opportunity. I mean, everything worked.
Oh, yeah.
And everything was fun to work with, and and it was a good crew. We didn't have any problems. And Seattle's a beautiful place to be.
Oh, sure.
So it was just the best of all worlds, really, for duty.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds great. So you're on board. What was your assignment on board? What was your
I was the ship's first damage control assistant. So I was in the engineering department.
Okay.
And I worked for the engineering chief, who was a lieutenant. And then we had a main propulsion assistant, who was another lieutenant. And I was an ensign.
Okay. Your rank, and this is timelines, what, 82, 83,
84?
82. Okay. 82. Good. Okay. So any experiences that did you recall on the Stark? Anything?
Well, the Stark was all sorts of experiences. I was on the Stark... for quite a while, about 5 years. I was on the Stark for 5 years.
Wow, that's a long time to be on one boat.
Yes, it was. It was one regular tour plus an extension.
Okay.
So the ship was commissioned in the Todd Shipyards in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
Then we left through the Straits of Juan de Fuca and down the coast of west coast of the U.S. and down through the Panama.
Sure.
And through the Panama up to Mayport.
Mm-hmm.
And from Mayport we went out and I remember we got back at Christmas time.
Mm.
So, you know, all the families were there and so on.
While
we were in Mayport at that point, it was a brand new ship, so we still had to, you know, do shakedown type things like degaussing and equipment related things. And we did a lot of that in the Caribbean, I recall. And let's see, where do we go from there? Went through the Panama, went to Mayport, Caribbean post shakedown task. We went to Guantanamo for the damage control shakedown. That's where everybody gets trained to fight a fire or to do whatever. It's all of the, you know, your basic response functions you get trained in Gitmo.
Do you do that on the boat or you do it in like
you do it on the boat.
Training facility? Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
It's on the boat.
I know that like in Newport and in Groton and places like that, they actually have off onshore type training activities that simulate if you were on a boat.
Yeah, Gitmo is where the crew learns to you know, respond in an emergency, whether it's, the enemy or a fire or you hit a rock, whatever it is.
Sure.
That's where you actually use all the equipment that's on board and you get rated and you keep doing it until your competency is acceptable and they don't let you go until you hit a certain mark. But, the Navy has a good system for it, so they get everybody trained.
Good. Any other experiences on the Stark that you can think of? Did you have any emergency situations or any alert situations, if that's the right term?
Not at that point. We were really in no real situations other than just really we were just learning our jobs. And for junior, brand new officers like myself, I was trained right from the start. So the captain at that time was Commander Terrence Costello, and he was a very good trainer. So he really concentrated on exactly, how we were to act on every watch and so on and so forth. So it was a training-intensive time. We were in three-section duty for the whole time that he was commander, which is basically three sections is 8, 8, and 8. You'd stand a watch, and then you'd work, and then you'd get 4 to 6 hours of sleep, and you'd keep cycling. We did that for over 3 years.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so on all the time.
But that's the way he was. So,
Yeah, kept everybody alert all the time that way.
Right. Let's see. After Gitmo, we stayed in Central America a little bit, just kind of monitoring. Kind of a classified thing, what we were doing there. We didn't do anything. I just stood my watches, and there wasn't much going on. There were some communications with some Air Force planes, some flight following and things like that, but it was just kind of a presence, they'll put a Navy ship somewhere.
Sure.
So,
Now, did the ship travel alone, or did you travel like in a battle group or a work, carrier group or anything like that?
Yeah, it would just vary with the assignment. Sometimes we would be with another frigate.
Okay.
Or in the case of we did go to the Persian Gulf and we went with a support group. It wasn't a battle group.
Yeah.
But we would go up and they didn't have a battle group in Persian Gulf at that time.
Okay.
It was a different assignment at that time.
Gotcha. So after the Stark.
There's a couple other things I wanted to mention. After the Central American phase, the Stark got picked to do the Great Lakes cruise, which was really quite an honor. And from back to Mayport we go, and then we did the Great Lakes cruise, which was just a really intense public relations thing. But the most interesting part about it was the navigational aspects of going through the St. Lawrence Seaway and all the Great Lakes, and all the Great Lakes are completely different.
Sure.
And you have to go through the locks, and that was very interesting. But the Navy does this every year, sends a frigate, because they'll fit through the locks.
Gotcha.
And it's PR to recruit for new sailors and so on. But it's a big deal to hit, Chicago and Milwaukee and all that.
Yeah. Yeah,
so
you must have had some time off and did some things, and
it was a lot of clean the ship.
Oh, okay.
And get your whites, stay in your whites, and then see an anchor detail, get back, that kind of thing. Yeah. So it was a bit of a burnout. But it was interesting. I think from there we went to the Persian Gulf, and this was to kind of help with shipping. U.S. interest shipping that was threatened. Mm-hmm. And there were incidents.
Okay.
Yeah. Because commercial shipping was attacked.
Yeah.
And the Stark was involved with at least one rescue.
Oh, no kidding. Wow. Tell us about that.
Well, I wasn't there.
Oh, okay.
They sent me to yet more schools.
Okay.
From the Persian Gulf.
Okay.
They, lifted me out of there and sent me to Dam Neck, where I was going to become the ship's second CIC officer.
CIC,
that's its Combat Information Center officer.
Okay.
So, which was another exciting billet. So while I was gone, sure enough, some foreign tanker was missiled, and the Stark sent its helicopter over and picked up a few of the crew, and a couple of them were killed, and it was a tense time for the crew. So, but I was not on the ship at that point.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah. After Damneck and CIC Officer School, I went to Electronic Warfare Officer School and a couple other schools. I went back to the Stark, where I was a CIC officer, and we did mostly Caribbean drug op kind of things. Mm. This is when the Navy was just starting that.
Sure.
We didn't pick anybody up. We didn't intercept anybody, right, but it was they definitely were doing that.
And what's our timeline now, Bill?
We're in 1984.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. And your rank is?
I'm a lieutenant.
Okay, great.
That's when we kind of left that period. I got back to Mayport, and that was kind of the end of my period. I had the option of staying or leaving.
I was going to ask you, you're just about up, right, for your enlistment. Yeah. So you decided to stay?
No. I got out.
Oh, you did get out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, from that point, I was done with the Stark.
Okay.
Yep.
And what was next in your...
Well, from the Stark, I immediately joined a reserve unit here in Jacksonville at the Naval Air Station, MIUW 1008, and that's Mobile Inshore Underwater Warfare.
Okay, great.
And I've got pictures of some of these, because most people have never heard of a MU unit, of which there are probably 20 of them in
really?
The country.
And
these are units that have a van, which is basically a communication center that they can put on a truck.
Mm-hmm.
And it's for coastal radar monitoring and sonar monitoring.
Okay.
Where you can't put a ship and it's supposed to be kind of clandestine. They're not well defended.
Hmm. And where was your reserve unit located? Was it in Jackson?
Yeah,
okay,
NAS Jackson.
Okay, great.
The reserve center there.
Fantastic. And so you did is this a monthly drill and then 2 week summer camp kind
of
deal?
Yeah, that was the once a month and then a couple of weeks active duty for training.
Mm-hmm.
But we took that thing out on our weekends here in town.
Yeah.
We'd take it down to Mayport and put it up on the beach and drag that thing around. It was a big unit. We had trucks and... Well, it's still down there because it's a commissioned unit.
Oh,
yeah, it's a deployable unit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
But that was interesting. I was a communications officer, which means I dealt with a communications chief because I really didn't know anything about the equipment, which was Korean War vintage.
All right. Yeah.
And it was basically, just radios, and we had a HF. It was an HF system, basically.
Mm-hmm. How many guys were in your unit?
There were probably, we had quite a big unit, and I think they're still good size.
Yeah. Where'd you go for your summer drills? When you went, did you stay here?
They put them, we'd go to Virginia.
Okay.
I remember one year we went to Virginia, just various places.
Yeah. But pretty much land-based at this point now because of the...
Oh, yeah. We had some small craft. Because what we would do is we'd take what this unit does to monitor noise in the water, which is part of the job.
Yeah,
close in to some point of interest to somebody is you take a sonar buoy that they drop out of the P3s, and the MUs know how to rig them so that they can drop an anchor, kind of drop a weight.
Yeah,
and they'll just sit there and send the noise information back to the van.
Sure.
So you're listening. Yeah. You're just listening for anything, and that's all that unit's about.
Very good. Okay. Just tell us a little bit more. So, Bill, tell us what else was going on in the reserves.
Well, after the MIUW, the MU 1008, and I was in that unit for a couple of years, I actually stopped reserve service for, I think, a year. And then I rejoined, and I was assigned to the Sims, which was a reserve ship in Mayport. And that's FF-1059. And the Sims was a Knox-class frigate, which means it had a steam plant. It was an old ship.
All right.
But that was interesting. We had an interesting experience. Can I tell you about that?
Oh, please do, yeah.
We were out in the Caribbean. It was deployed down to Barbados. And on the way back from Barbados... there was an engineering casualty. They were running on one diesel generator, and they were going through what's called basic engineering casualty control drills, BECCES, and they didn't do it properly, the engineering watch, and they blew up one of the boilers.
Oh, wow.
and the ship went cold iron dark.
Yeah.
And we're in, you know, between two of the Caribbean islands. Montserrat was one of them, and somewhere else.
Sure.
And that was it. And that was kind of embarrassing, but that was quite an experience to have a ship and a crew just cold iron in the Caribbean floating and dark as...
How many boilers do they have on a boat like that?
They have two boilers.
Two boilers.
Yeah.
Now, are the boilers installed? Obviously, when the ship is built, how difficult is it to replace a boiler?
They can do anything.
Okay.
They just cut the ship apart if they have to.
That's how.
It was that one boiler was out of service, and the other boiler they were doing drills on, and they didn't follow procedure.
Yeah.
And they tried to relight it after the fuel sat in there too long, and the fuel vapor built up, and it blew out, actually, ductwork. It didn't, like, it wasn't catastrophic failure.
Gotcha.
But it was definitely GQ.
Yeah.
So the experience there was, what do you do when there's nothing you can do? So we were, a Coast Guard cutter came out and lent an assistance.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we got towed into Puerto Rico with an ocean-going tug, and then they got things fixed.
Yeah. So. Now, Joel, this was during one of your...
Act Dutris.
Yeah.
In the reserves.
Yeah. So did you stay... You all stay with the boat longer than your timeline that you had planned, or...?
No, we stayed through, you know, that... As long as our orders had us there.
Gotcha.
And I think I just had to leave from Puerto Rico.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Because they were still working on it.
Yeah.
From the Sims, I was assigned. They decommissioned the Sims, so then we went through a decommissioning ceremony with the Sims.
Okay.
So they sold the Sims, I think, to some other country, or they mothballed it. I don't remember.
What's a decommissioning ceremony like?
Well, it's where they formally take it out of service.
Right, but I mean, give us a feel for the moment. You know, everybody's
kind of the opposite of the commissioning service, where you have the bunting and everybody's in their dress blues, and you have a formal ceremony and. There's a procedure for it, but it's just like commissioning backwards.
Yeah. Any dignitaries come out to something like that?
Oh, yeah. Well, in this case, there may have been a senator or somebody like
in the
Bay CEO, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And it was decommissioned. Where was it decommissioned?
In Mayport.
Mayport, yeah. Wow.
It's a routine thing to decommission a ship. But from there, I was assigned to the Impervious, which is an ocean-going minesweeper. Never set foot on it the whole time.
Okay.
But it was interesting. The crew, though, in that unit did have to deploy to the Persian Gulf by themselves on an old MSO.
Yeah.
And that was tough.
Yeah.
A few divorces out of that.
When you say old, you're talking like World War II vintage or Korean War?
It was at least Korean War, and it may have been older.
Hmm. Now, are minesweepers, are they wood? Are they the hulls
this,
made out
yeah,
of
this Yeah, this had basically a wood hull.
Yeah. So I would imagine getting it over to the Persian Gulf must have been...
Oh, things broke, and the habitability was miserable, and you're crossing the Atlantic on a small ship.
Yeah,
it was no fun. They had a really tough time.
I'll bet.
From there, I was transferred to... They decommissioned the Impervious.
Oh, okay.
And then I went to what's called COM Mine Div 129, which is a Commander Mine Division 129.
Mm-hmm.
This is a Commodore staff.
Okay.
And it's a reserve unit.
Okay.
Okay, so it's a reserve component of Commodore staff. And the function of the unit was that the CO of that unit... His job title was a Commodore, which is not a rank. It's a job title. He was a commander. And he was a minesweeper from Charleston, so he's part of the mining community. But the purpose of the unit was to assist in exercises where you have multiple assets. You have minesweepers. You might have divers.
Mm-hmm.
You might have aircraft that can drop some mines. You might have a surface ship that might monitor an area. And this guy's job is just to kind of coordinate the mining aspect of an exercise or an operation. So that's what that was. It was a lot of fun, that unit. We got pretty much could go where we wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned a lot. And the Navy sent me to yet a couple more schools.
Good.
So these were mining-related schools in Charleston.
Mm-hmm.
But we would go to Ingleside, Texas, and Charleston, and various places, Panama City, where they had mining interests. And we just learned. It was basically a learning preparation. We did participate in some joint exercises as that unit.
Sure. Now, when you went to school for the additional training, was that part of your summer camp kind of thing, or was that additional
time?
That
was additional time.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so did you have to sign up for that? Or
they just cut me to the orders. Yeah, okay. I just had to have the time available.
Okay. Yeah. But could you have refused that if you wanted to refuse
yeah,
it?
I could have gotten out of that.
But that was a training of interest to you, and you wanted to
Yeah, it was part of my billet.
Yeah. And you may, I would imagine, too, you were trying to qualify yourself for a higher rank as well. Is that,
well, yeah, that's what you do, right? Yeah. Any military branches, you're always working to keep your job. And, right. And I was the chief staff officer just because I was the only one that would do it or could do it at that point. It was a small unit. There were only six or seven of us.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of radiomen. We had a quartermaster chief, a warrant officer, a couple of officers.
And what was your rank at the time?
I was a lieutenant. No, I was a lieutenant commander there.
Yeah. Good.
And then the last unit. I was assigned to a reserve unit because they decommissioned that unit. I was assigned to an engineering unit. The unit was actually in Tampa, in the Tampa Reserve Center. And that was called ComNav Act UK, Commander Naval Activities United Kingdom. And their job was really to support the engineering types, the CB types, that maintain the buildings that Navy owns or leases in the United Kingdom.
Oh, really?
It's part of Syncus Navier.
Okay. Yeah.
So I don't know how I ended up there, but that's where I ended up.
Sure.
And so I got to take a few trips to England, and that
must
was
must have
fun.
Been interesting, huh?
It was.
Yeah, a little different.
Yeah. And you sign in and out of Syncus Navier in London.
Mm-hmm.
And we stayed in London and took the train out every day to the naval activity. And they have a nice facility. The U.S. Navy has a nice facility out in West Ruislip, England.
Wow.
And that was it.
That was it. Well, you left after 15 years. Usually there's a 20-year kind of a thing with retirement.
Yeah. I have a business, and it was conflicting with my business.
Gotcha.
And so to drive down to Tampa once a month and come back late Sunday night.
It became disruptive, too.
I really couldn't manage it.
Yeah. Thinking back through your years now, both active and in the reserves, was there anybody that you became really close to, any fellow sailors or officers that became good buddies?
I still have some friends from the Sims, the Mew, my reserve units in Jacksonville, because they're in town and I know where they live, and we would do things together. So we run into them.
Yeah,
once in a while. Yeah. You know, being in Fernandina Beach, you kind of get isolated from Jacksonville.
Yeah, sure, you do. Yeah, but it's usually by choice if you can have any control over it. Anybody that you served with or for that was inspiring to you, had great leadership skills that you sort of like felt was a mentor in some fashion?
Sure, two people. Commander T.W. Costello, who was the first CO of the Stark.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very good trainer.
Mm-hmm.
A little tough, but very good trainer. And the second one is Captain Paul Wrynn, who I met at the Pentagon. I worked this was an act d'outre, just a two-weeker. And he was one of, his ship was an FFG that hit a mine in the northern Persian Gulf.
Wow.
And his crew brought that ship back.
Yeah.
So he was made an executive assistant to Vice Admiral Cahoonie, who was the chief of surface warfare at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And he's an excellent, he was just in a class by himself, Clemson graduate.
Yeah.
But he just had an aura.
Yeah.
You know, people wanted to do things for this guy.
Yeah, people have that way about them.
So
yeah.
Those two,
yeah.
Costello and Captain Wrynn.
That's great. Yeah. That's great. Any other experiences that you want to share as far as the military goes, either through the active duty or through the reserves?
Well, for that much time, every trip there's something that happens, or whatever, or it's just boring. The Mew was a lot of staying up all night listening.
Sure.
That's really kind of boring.
Yeah.
The underway deployment on these ships, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Good, good, good. So you mentioned that you left the reserves because it was starting to conflict with your real life, rest of your life. What is it that you did for work at the time?
Well, I'm an industrial hygienist.
Okay.
And that means I have to travel quite a bit.
Okay.
And, I go to plants and so on and do compliance work.
Mm-hmm.
But in driving down to that reserve center the reserves can be the reserves. You know, it's not, sometimes they're not the real name.
Sure.
It's the reserves.
Sure.
You're in a building, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just really had enough.
So you still do the same line of work? You're still doing the same thing?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay, great. What do you do for fun? Social type stuff?
I'm a sailor.
Sailor, so you like to be out in the water, obviously.
Yeah.
Okay, good. What about any of the organizations, any of the VFW, Legion, anything like that? You're part of?
No, not really. Nancy and I just, when it's not too hot, we go sailing up there.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you. Yeah. Anything else? Any other things that?
I got my cheat sheet. I got everything in here I wanted to mention.
Good. Very good. Trying to think if is there anything else that I didn't ask that you might want to mention at all? Let me ask you a question about your perspective of the Navy. Do you feel that that helped get you ready for the rest of your life, the time that you spent, the active duty?
The training was invaluable.
Yeah.
And just I can see it with my competitors.
Hmm.
And really it's the kind of the management. I was just a division officer.
Hmm.
But they do give you good management training.
Yeah.
And so I can see where some of my other consulting competitors don't have some of these skills, and they handle things totally differently.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, and then,
yeah. Any views at all on the youth of today? Do you feel that they should serve in some fashion or out of high school? Or
yeah, if they're mature enough. You know, a kid that's not mature enough is going to just get chewed up.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a different situation. I mean, with these kids joining the Army and those kind of deployments.
Yeah.
When I went in, we didn't have that threat, really.
Right, right.
In the Navy, you know, it's a different war.
Yeah, you're true. Good point. So, yeah, your branch of service, it's a different kind of thing.
It is.
Yeah.
So the main thing about the Navy is just really just, you know, you got to like ships and being out at sea. And
sure.
That's the name of the game.
Sure.
And it can be tiring, obviously. But you can do anything you want in the Navy.
Great.
As long as it's something that's consistent with a Navy objective,
mm-hmm.
you can do it and make as much out of it as you want. And that's what I learned. You have to be in long enough to see that.
Right.
But I could have stayed forever, really.
Yeah.
It just didn't
go that way. Quality of training, upward mobility, rank,
uh-huh.
self-fulfillment with each one
ladder. Plenty of opportunity.
Yeah.
Not for a junior person who can't see it.
Right.
But if you stay in long enough, you can see, okay, you know.
Sure.
And you find that the communities are actually smaller, even though the Navy's large. You start to know enough people where you can do something with it, and that's a very interesting aspect.
Yeah,
I mean it's political enough, but you can do what you want.
Sure. Great. Well, we're about to conclude. I'd like to thank you on behalf of the Museum and Library of Congress. It's been a great interview, Bill. Truly, I appreciate your time.
Well, thank you very much for scheduling us.
Absolutely.